Mystery Crate has been presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hello, Mystery Creators. Huh? A little nickname for them? You guys like that? We're workshopping. Send it in. You guys need a name. People that listen to Mystery Crate, you guys need a name. We're going to start with Mystery Creators.
Saints.
Boom. I like that.
They're just for putting up with all of our nonsense. They're saints.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, we've actually seen the download numbers, and they're blowing us away, really. The diehard fans have really been super receptive to what we're doing. We continue to ask you for your feedback. Hit us up on our social media handles. If you don't know them by now, Chris, where can people follow you?
At Chris Cody ESPN.
Billy, where can people follow you?
Billy Gill.
Roy, where can people get your mama jokes?
At Roy Belly.
And I'm at Michael Ryan Ruiz.
All right. We want to go out to Mooch, all right? We'd like to take calls sometimes on the local hour. We haven't really done it in Mystery Crate yet, but we think this guy is a fun call. Mooch, what's up, man?
So I've been having this dream about every 3 years, and that has to do with the show, and I'm not sure if it's based on actual events.
Go on.
So I lived in Florida. I'm Mooch from Michigan. I lived in Florida around 2011, and I emailed the show. I think this is the dream. I mean, details are fuzzy, as was my time in Florida. But I emailed the show saying I was a fan from out of state, and somebody emailed me back, or I think, inviting me to a remote and even inviting me to their house beforehand for a couple drinky poos beforehand. And all I remember is that I went there, the person had a fish tank, and I went to the remote and had one too many drinks, ended up not being able to make it through the whole remote and was sent on my way home. Did this happen?
All right, let's rewind a little bit. Actually live in Michigan? Is that real or is that a dream? Like, let's try to figure out what's reality and what's a dream here. Because you showed up at someone's house and got drunk and got kicked out on the show. That definitely happened.
Too many drinky poos.
Yeah. What other details do you have of this dream?
Okay, so the details I have is the email. I remember I went to a condo, I believe, that was gated. And I think I had to do some sort of security, like, whether it was typing in a code or actually, you know, someone at one of those like toll booth things. And then I remember being in there and there was a fish tank.
Were there fish in the tank or was it more like one of those tanks that's just empty that's been abandoned because taking care of fish is a pain?
Great question. I don't remember specific fish, but I remember bubbles.
So there was definitely water in there. Were there more people there, like fans, or was it just you and like whoever it is that you emailed?
No, it was just me. And I remember whoever it was, if this person exists, they were rushing because they were trying to get to the remote, and they kind of almost said, enjoy a couple drinks, we'll see you out there, have fun. So I almost had access to their apartment or condo.
Okay. So you sent an email to someone on the show, they invited you to their condo, there was going to be a remote that day, and they left you alone in their place with an aquarium with bubbles drinking, and then they were going to meet you at the remote?
Well, they're just like, you know, have fun at the remote, have a good time, you know, whatever. And then the next thing I remember is the remote was in some sort of like a hall or a banquet or something.
And were
not a nice one.
Were there a lot of people there?
I was a little underwhelmed by the attendance, to be honest.
Well, you were also drunk, were you not?
That's true. Yeah, I was.
How many drinky poos does it take to get you drunk?
Oh, wow. Back then, quite a few. I would say, you know, 8 Milwaukee's best on a good day.
Wow. And is this a reoccurring dream that you keep having?
Yeah, every 3 years or so.
So you say it's a person that's associated with a show that you emailed that invited you into their gated community condo, yet you still haven't revealed the name of the person of the show. Is it just a faceless person that it's just assumed they're associated with the show, or is it an actual person on the show like Roy?
I don't know, because I don't remember the email, you know, this is a dream. And I've had a couple emails since then. And I did some research. The only email that I can find through my multiple emails is November of 2011. I just emailed Can't Stand Dan and said, it's 6:45 p.m. and I'm still hungover. Any cures?
Wow.
This is not the dream I expected when I saw on the screen we had a guy with a show dream.
Yeah, I don't really know what to do with this outside of just be a little creeped out. And not by the dream, really, or just you as a person. It's just the drinky poo thing. I still can't shake that.
What's your phone number, Mooch? We'll bleep this out.
It's area code 586.
Uh-huh.
5.
Uh-huh.
1.
All right. We had a dream analyst on once, and maybe we can reach out to her and we could do something with you and the dream analyst, because this is really weird.
Just going to the email itself, I said any cures for a 6:45 p.m. hangover. I don't get those kind of hangovers anymore, but I did find a cure, and wondering if you guys had your own, if you want to hear mine.
Yeah, for sure. 6:45 p.m. hangover.
I'm really worried
about
what happened to you. Like, I feel like you did do this with someone that had nothing to do with the show. And
quite possible.
Somehow you either think that it was show related or you sent an email to the wrong person and they acted on this and you had a night with someone who fraudulently told you they were part of the show.
Was I roofied?
I mean,
you don't remember the face.
No, it was a younger person. I would say, you know, late 20s, early 30s. If I, you know, once again, it was fuzzy.
Well, I have to rule myself out because I live in a gated condo and I often just invite complete strangers to my home, but I've never had a fish tank, so it can't possibly be me.
Good call.
So fish tank, email, remote, sad location, anything else that's helpful in this?
Have you given us your hangover cure yet?
No, I will get to that. The only other thing I know detail-wise is that I think that the person saw me a little inebriated and offered for me that I could crash at their place, but I think I ended up just leaving instead. I do remember that part. That happens sometimes in the dream. It depends on when I wake up during this dream.
Hmm. Well, this is going to remain a mystery.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's follow up next week. Let's try to get the dream analyst. I actually follow the dream analyst on Instagram. She is a pinup artist, and it's wild. It's not suitable for work. Anyways, Mooch.
You want the hangover cure?
We keep forgetting that, Mooch. Yes, please give us your hangover cure.
Chips and salsa.
What?
How you much saved it, Mooch.
How much chips, how much salsa?
I mean, it, you know, it depends on the hangover. I can go through a whole container.
Are we talking mild, medium, hot salsa? What kind of chips? Are we going scoops?
Well, I go medium, regular tortilla, kind of the Stan Van Gundy. I don't like a flavored chip. But I believe the salt kind of absorbs the alcohol. The vegetables in the salsa kind of are the you know, gives you a little bit of wake up. And then I go medium salsa because, you know, the spice, once again, just kind of kicks you, wakes you up a little bit.
Well, thank you for the life hack. And I don't know if this is worthy of a follow-up, but we're going to try to help you solve this mystery here on Mystery Crate. Yeah. We'll try to get you a dream analyst. Wow. Maybe we can get some closure. Thank you for your time, Mooch from Michigan.
Thank you.
Oh, also, stop saying drinky poos at all costs.
I can't promise that.
All right.
Being a dream analyst seems like such a weird job.
That was your setup there, Roy.
That was a pretty good transition right there.
Did you say job?
Did you say jobs?
Jobs, you say? Well, let me tell you about the fine folks at ZipRecruiter.
Jobs, you say, huh? Well, let's talk about ZipRecruiter here. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy and you only have to go to one place to get it done. That's ZipRecruiter.com/crate. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But don't stop there.
No, they don't.
No, they do not. No, no, no. No,
no,
they,
no. That's what Chris Cody always says. Can I help you out?
No.
Because we don't go to you a lot on these things, right? You're going to need to add a little of your own personal flair. The way that Chris Cody does it is how, Chris? When they say, when ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there, what do
they
you
don't
say?
Stop there. No, no, no.
No, 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 no. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with
how
the right
many?
Experience. Thousands! Thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply for your job.
Oh, man. And what happens as applications come in, Roy?
ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match.
How effective is ZipRecruiter, Roy?
4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day.
How do I try this incredible service out, Roy?
Well, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. For free! at this exclusive web address.
For free?
No. For free!
Damn, could it be?
Yeah, oh yeah, it is free. You don't pay a cent. ZipRecruiter.com/crate. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CRATE. ZipRecruiter.com/crate.
ZipRecruiter.
The smartest way to hire. I expect everybody to say it there.
Okay. Oh, yeah, we should do that. Run it back. ZipRecruiter.
The smartest way to hire.
All right, guys, for this week's Mystery Crate, believe it or not, it's not just going to be an interview with Mooch. I don't know if you know this about me, but I've been involved with a music festival that's coming into town. I know I'm sort of reputed as like the music snob guy.
No, not
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I love music. Music is really my passion, and I reached out and made friends with a couple of dudes that ended up creating a music festival called Miami Beach Pop Fest. It's happening just down the block in November between on the sand of South Beach between 5th and 10th, right outside of our Clevelander studio. And I caught up with one of the founders of the festival, one of my friends, Paul Peck, who comes from Bonnaroo and Outside Lands, because maybe a lot of people in our audience are a little fascinated about music festivals, how one gets into that industry. And Paul has a really cool background in that he organized the original Bonnaroo Super Jam. So he's worked with massive collections of incredible artists on these great collaborations. And we'll get into what it means to build a music festival from scratch and what you can expect from this year's inaugural Miami Beach Pop Fest. So hopefully you'll like it. I'll try to make it as entertaining as possible for you.
Is Bonnaroo anything like Dunkaroos?
Good question. That's a great question.
Great question. It's not at all the same.
Oh, wow.
Perhaps I'll learn.
You'll learn all about it. Dunkaroos were pretty fire, though. Yeah. They need to bring that back. They're only available in certain countries. Yeah. Still available, not in this country. Are they an Amazon exclusive?
No, you can make your own. Like, anyone can make Dunkaroos. You just go and you buy Nutella, and then you get, what's it called?
So you were
Teddy Grahams, and then you just dunk them.
You were a chocolate Dunkaroo guy. Yeah. I was like the vanilla frosting with sprinkles Dunkaroo flavor. Ooh. Personally, that was my favorite.
Yeah, vanilla one. Yeah.
I was a sucker for any daytime treat that was advertised to kids on Nickelodeon during Six Sickly's time.
If you get one snack from your childhood, just one snack forever, and it's the only one you can have, I'm going Gushers.
Fruit roll-up.
You remember Stick Stickley had a twin, and they had to find him?
Yeah. And that
was like a whole thing.
It was a whole thing that was to increase viewership during the summer. Now I know how these things work. I was just enthralled by it. We got to find Stick Stickley's lost relative here. But this was just all a play to get me to watch the Dunkaroo commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, here's a self-indulgent interview I did with my friend Paul Peck. Hopefully you enjoy it. It's a Mystery Crate. And as you guys know, this is a bit of a self-indulgent project for the Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz in the Shipping Container. And I want to welcome in my friend Paul Peck. Now, Paul Peck is the co-founder of a music festival that is coming to Miami Beach called Miami Beach Pop. And I linked up with Paul a couple years ago when he was exploring this whole idea. And I've been lucky enough to sort of see the festival grow from the infancy stages. And I don't know, sort of like a Miami ambassador to what Paul and his tremendous team is trying to accomplish here. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But for the audience, I want to introduce Paul Peck, who has amazing credentials in the industry. As you know from following me on the show and social media, I love music festivals. Paul was one of the founders of Okeechobee, which I dearly miss. It was a wonderful festival. Year one, I expected all these sort of hiccups, and it was a camping festival, and it was quite honestly the best festival experience I ever had. And before that, Paul came from Bonnaroo and Outside Lands. Paul, for those who are Bonnaroovians, is that what they're called, Paul?
They are Bonnaroovians, yeah.
Bonnaroovians. For those Bonnaroovians, you may be familiar with the Super Jam. That is Paul's baby. Paul Peck founded the Super Jam concept. So, Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I have so many questions about Miami Beach Pop, and I'm very excited about all that, but I wanted to get into your history in the business, because I think a lot of people are interested in just music festivals as a whole. People sort of fantasy book music festivals all the time. It's a really cool dream job. How did you get involved with the music festival business?
It all started back in my time in New Orleans. So I was always a really passionate music fan as a kid. And then I went to New Orleans and I had this awakening to all this new type of music and really food too. So I went from being this person that thought I liked one kind of music, one type of food, one type of, you know, just a little bit of more of a specific tastes, and quickly realized that I liked everything. And I liked this idea of bringing different flavors together. And I was in the fortunate position that I started pretty young in my history in New Orleans. I was a college kid, started managing some bands, started working closely with some artists, and I was doing an internship for my favorite club in the world, which is Tipitina's. And I had this vision for a show, which was an all-star tribute to Stevie Wonder, playing all of my favorite Stevie Wonder songs live. I was like, gosh, why can't I hear all these incredible Stevie Wonder songs performed in this amazing club by some of these world-class musicians in New Orleans? And the club, after me begging them for a date, gave me the date. And eventually, we did the show, and I got all these artists to perform it, and I like worked with the set list, and it was a total chaotic thing, and it's its own long story, and I was this 20-year-old long-haired kid putting the show on, but the show was a big success, and financially, I was able to bonus the artists, and I treated them really well, and I had a good reputation with the artists, and my bands were doing well, and I was just really immersed in the music community at a very young age in New Orleans. When I graduated, the Superfly team, the original producers of Bonnaroo, hired me, and a year later, I was, you know, on the grounds of Bonnaroo, and we were putting it all together.
So you specifically worked on the Super Jam. Was that right away you came with that idea because your background with the Stevie Wonder tribute, or did you sort of learn the business from within before you, for maybe a year before you actually approached the producers of Bonnaroo with this concept for the Super Jam?
So Super Jam was a term that Superfly started before I started working with them. But it was always the kind of show that I gravitated toward. And I had done a couple of these large-scale sort of collaboration shows. And when I came in, it was natural for me to start producing their Super Jams. And the first one that I ever did was before the first Bonnaroo, and it was with Questlove and George Porter from The Meters. We started off with this incredible show. It was, I think, a week before Mardi Gras. Then I was kind of almost by default tasked with doing the Bonnaroo Super Jam. Bonnaroo the first year was a lot less of a well-oiled machine than it is now. It was a little bit of like, we had a great team and a very experienced team, but it was, we're getting in this and we're going to work really hard and see what's going to happen. And it was absolutely myself and the producers sending the, you know, credential packages and meal tickets out to artists on the road and like dealing with that and giving people directions on the phone, because it was way before iPhones. The Super Jam was a slot on stage two on Sunday that all weekend we were just telling people, come here at this time. That's the Super Jam. All right, we got a drummer. We got the guitar player. We got the bass player. And we just told all these artists to show up there.
Wait, it was a mystery to all attendees?
It was a true jam. It was come by this stage at this time, and we're going to see what happens. And we, you know, it was so fun. It was like the people from Galactic and String Cheese Incident and Carl Denson and North Mississippi All-Stars and Michael Franti. And oh, it just was no set list, no plans, and all these musicians are just so talented and so comfortable on the fly that it was a pretty magical thing, but it was total afternoon, daytime show on a huge stage, which isn't really the way that we did the Super Jams or did the Super Jams in later years. It was more like late night vibe in a tent and much more rehearsed than this.
Well, I want to get into that because I think probably the most famous, because I think it was a part of a larger ad campaign, I think it was associated with sort of car commercials, was the collaboration between Skrillex and The Doors. And you produced that one. Is that probably the most famous Super Jam? Which one did you have the most fun working on?
There were so many of them that were so fun.
Yeah, I don't want to put you in a bad spot.
No. I mean, that was definitely one of the most epic fireworks Super Jam shows we ever did. You know, there was also, some of them I have to take more or less of an active role, but Skrillex had done the whole thing with The Doors, and it was really cool, and I was aware of that. But with that show, you know, we kind of started off the process. I basically, he had done this cool thing with The Doors, and it was like this really sort of groundbreaking collaboration with him and them. And but I had this sort of concept for Skrillex of what the Super Jam with him could be. And I actually like went with his agent to a show to talk with him about it in person. And the thought that I brought to him was, you know, here's an artist whose fans are Skrillex fans. But when you think about what Skrillex's music is, it's sort of all these varied flavors and influences, and he's a musicologist and it's in his own way, and it's just his own sort of prism that has all these different legendary epic artists and styles mashed in together in a really thoughtful, creative, holy Skrillex way.
Yeah, Skrillex Skrillex has a background that maybe most people that are familiar with his music aren't aware of, because he has that screamo band that he was a part of. I've seen him play the bass at shows before. He's a true musician, Skrillex.
He's the kind of guy, and I saw this in rehearsals, he can pick up an instrument and just play it. He's not really known for being this, like, instrumentalist, but he is just music embodied. And how the music manifests itself, you know, he's this guy who uses technology to just unlock the deep troves of his creativity. But with that show, I went to him and I said, you know, these are the kind of influences that I hear in your music. I hear, you know, classic rock, I hear punk, I hear reggae, I hear hip-hop, I hear soul, I hear R&B, and I hear all these other things too. I want to do a live show that puts Skrillex with a live, incredible, virtuoso band, and we take the audience through a spin exploring each sphere and each corner of your influence. And I think I asked him, like, what were some of his, like, earliest formative musical memories, and I think he said that one of the first things he remembered his dad playing for him was The Doors. And I thought that was just such a cool thing. And this was after the campaign happened. But after hearing that, we're, you know, now out. We kind of had a basic concept together, and he had a lot to add to that concept too. And with myself and his manager, we ended up, like, reaching out to Robbie Krieger's team. And Robbie was the original. Robbie is the lead guitar player from The Doors. Mm-hmm. And he wrote Break On Through to the Other Side. And he's a legendary artist. And somehow we were able to get him to come in to Bonnaroo from L.A., and do a show with Skrillex at, like, midnight on Saturday night of the festival. And this was one of those shows where, you know, maybe we had, like, 2 hours slotted out. And I think the show ended up being, like, 3.5 hours or something crazy like that. And late night, just in the tent under the stars at Bonnaroo, and, like, Robbie Krieger came out. And
who else came out?
Well, Robbie Krieger came out and was doing Doors songs with the singer of Cage the Elephant, Matt Schultz. And that was a really special part of the show.
That's wild.
And there's actually video of it. Directed and produced by my good friend Danny Clinch, who's this, like, legendary music director and photographer. And there's an episode, you can find it on YouTube. We also had Damian Marley. And as part of my research process for this show, I found out that Krieger from The Doors and Densmore, the drummer, had a project in the 80s that was like a Bob Marley tribute. And they'd released an EP on vinyl. And so I came up with the idea, and I pitched it to Sonny, and then we eventually pitched it to Robbie Krieger about
Sonny is Skrillex.
Skrillex. Mm-hmm. About having Krieger join in for some Bob Marley songs with Damian Marley.
Wow.
Sonny's really close with Damian Marley, so we were able to get Damian Marley to come and be a part of this too, and, you know, talk about one of the major current genre blending artists, and he's a visionary artist. And so we had, like, that whole vibe. So we're, like, doing Bob Marley songs. We had Krieger on guitar, but Skrillex had reimagined the, you know, drum patterns and all this stuff. And Thundercat was on bass and Big Gigantic and background vocals. So it was just a really cool thing. And then we also had Miss Lauryn Hill. We had Janelle Monáe. We had Craig Robinson was sort of, like, the host of the show. And I think he fronted a Bill Withers song and sang the hook on some, like, hip-hop songs he did. It was really, really cool thing. And there was so many other artists too on that show. Zed was a part of that one. Warpaint came out and did an incredible version of Pump Up the Jam.
I love Warpaint.
Me too.
I think they're fantastic.
It went Pump Up the Jam into Bowie's Let's Dance.
Jesus.
And they did a Warpaint melancholy vibey version of those two songs that was like but with it was like Warpaint meets Skrillex meets these songs, and they were just so unbelievable. And the lead singer Emily just crushed these songs, and they were just really, really cool.
So that super jam happens, and your career shortly thereafter sort of evolves. At what point do you link up with Steve, the other co-founder of Okeechobee, and you start mapping out this original concept, which is you had worked on some established festivals, Outside Lands. I don't know how early in the stages, but you had something to do with how that festival sort of found its foothold in the industry. But this is the first time you start mapping out an original concept for a first-year festival, which has a whole new set of hiccups and challenges and hurdles and political red tape. So when do you start coming up with this idea? When do you link up with Steve?
We were creating the vision for what Okeechobee would ultimately evolve into kind of around that time of when I was doing that project at Bonnaroo with Skrillex. And I think it was a few months later that I did my last show at Superfly, which was during Outside Lands. It was a late night super jam with Kool and the Gang and big special guests. And we had MC Hammer come out. I think Craig Robinson came in for that one too, because I had a good relationship with Craig and he flew in from LA. And there were other really cool special guests on that show. And I think that was really the last show that I did with Superfly. The next year I was full force into Bonnaroo, and that was 2014. And then 2016 was the first Okeechobee. And Okeechobee was just always intended, like Bonnaroo before it, and certainly like Miami Beach Pop is now, just to be different. Mm-hmm. We wanted to do something that, like, was its own new template. You know, it wasn't a copy and paste of something that currently existed. We wanted its own vibe, its own character, its own artist mix, and its own experience for this community. And I really always believed in Florida as a market. And Steve actually had connected with the Okeechobee site, and he approached me, and he was like, the first thing I told Steve was, look, I'm really happy at Superfly. I have all the creative latitude in the world. I'm doing incredible stuff every day with Bonnaroo and all the other projects. I'm not interested unless the site is amazing. He said it was the best site he's ever seen, and he really encouraged me to come see it.
How many crocodiles were on the site at that time?
There's always a lot. I mean, that thing is just like, it's gator country.
Yeah, I mean, for those of you that aren't familiar with the festival grounds at Okeechobee, they created a wonderland out of, as Paul said, gator country. There's all sorts of foliage. It looks like a jungle. And in certain parts of Florida, when there's that much greenery and foliage and swamplands, you got to run into a lot of wildlife. So what's it like clearing out, what was the square mileage on the entire property?
About 800 acres. It's a really big property, but it was beautifully manicured. And it's like Florida's like a little bit of a tropical, like natural paradise for things to just grow and exist and thrive. And so it's the kind of space that if the lands weren't managed and manicured, it would turn into jungle like in 6 months.
Yeah.
So, but totally, like on that site, I've seen gators, bobcats, snakes, there's a certain kind of hog that like,
boars,
yeah, rooting things up, owls, everything. Jeez. Fortunately, when you come in and do a music festival and start playing music, things just
clear out.
Yeah, animals are like, yeah, I didn't buy a ticket. I'm not down with this whole, you know, crazy dancing thing. Animals leave when the concert starts. Yeah. They don't want to be around people. They don't want to be around bass-heavy music. But that was a little bit...
The gator's not sticking around for bass nectar?
No, the gator's, like, gone for bass nectar.
I would imagine, though, they'd race to the rail and try to be the first ones there.
Totally. And they'd probably be successful because it does turn it right. So
I don't know, man. Bass nectar fans are probably the only creature more aggressive than a Florida gator.
They got a taste for good stuff, and they're going for it. You know, now that we're doing Miami Beach Pop, we have our own, you know, like Bonnaroo was. There wasn't anything like Bonnaroo before Bonnaroo. And with Miami Beach Pop, we're trying to do something totally different. It's a different artist mix. It's a different message that we're trying to put out there. It's this idea of like really embracing the fact that, you know, right now with technology, we have so much access to different music and even different types of technology, just like obviously through the flow of information. But it kind of comes with its own challenges. You know, we all spend so much time looking at the world through screens. It really is easy to forget that we're all a little bit more the same than we are different, and actually a lot more the same than we are different. There's the fact that we're all living on planet Earth at the same time, and somebody told me recently there's like a 0.01 chance that any two people would even be alive at the same time.
Jeez.
Over the course of history. But we're all here together, and we're all physically connected to planet Earth, and on a human level, we're all drawn to the ocean, and this festival is going to take place on the most iconic beach in the world. But it's a celebration of connection, and Miami Beach is, I think, a good reference point for a multicultural, flavorful city that's really in the mode of what sort of America and the American dream was always meant to be about. It's about this cross-section of cultures coming together and the new dynamic that's created by these flavors. And it really reminds me of New Orleans. When I think about my favorite cities in America, it's New Orleans and it's Miami. In New Orleans Jazz Fest, it is my favorite festival for that reason. That festival couldn't exist anywhere else. Because you go to New Orleans Jazz Fest and you got the music and the food and the vibe. We don't have that here in Miami. The other cool thing about Miami and Miami Beach is that they have this incredible natural feature with this vibrant city and nightlife. So the idea of like city and nature and the excitement, that's kind of what this is all about. And on the programming side with the artists, it's really intended to be a boldly diverse celebration of different flavors so people can come and celebrate the things that they know they love, but also connect with some new flavors and some new artists and some new styles. And to me, those are always my most meaningful moments at events when I experienced something that I didn't even know that I liked. Now I have a new artist or thing that I love for the rest of my life.
Yeah. For the audience, I want to just sort of plug in some gaps. So after Okeechobee year one, I attended the first year of Okeechobee. I was really nervous about it because it was a camping festival. It was the first time I did a camping festival, and I was so blown away by the experience. You had the powwow, and at one point on the stage, there was Wynn Butler, John Oates, Miguel, Mumford & Sons, and Skrillex, and they were doing Rock the Casbah, and it was the most amazing festival experience I had ever had. So I reached out to you, I think, on Instagram because – there was a news that you had left Okeechobee after the first year. I was so bummed because I had read a lot of interviews in which you were featured in, and I know how much you cared about the theme and just about the industry and making sure people like me came away with a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I reached out to Paul on Instagram. We struck up a friendship, and Paul said, hey, I'm coming to Miami. Would like to meet up for lunch. And Paul came in, and I met Steve, the other founder of Miami Beach Pop. And they started bouncing off this wonderful concept about bringing something on an Okeechobee scale, on a Bonnaroo scale, on a Jazz Fest scale to Miami. And while you always said you believed in Florida as a festival market, a lot of people around the industry would say you're crazy because Florida is one of those weird, especially Miami, being such a melting pot. There isn't one specific lane that you should gear towards. So with Miami Beach Pop, you just cast the biggest net possible and you came up with one of the more eclectic, fun lineups ever. What sort of challenges specific to this city were there in getting this off the ground? Because it's different than Okeechobee, where you just had to come up with a total infrastructure. Here, this is, as you said, the most famous beach in America. They've hosted several events down here, but there's residents, there's things like spring break and all sorts of other events that you have to keep in mind, and you have to make the residents happy. Environmentally, there are different hurdles that you have to clear with Miami Beach Pop because you're actually on the beach, and I know the environment is important to you and to a lot of the artists that are featured on this bill. So what sort of challenges did you encounter in trying to get this off the ground? Because it's been reported that there were delays in this festival because you wanted to get it absolutely perfect.
Totally. It's like we are only interested in doing special work. And it takes time to do it and do it right. And this is a true partnership with the city. We really needed to take our time to not only identify the right dates, the right plan, the right operation plan. We have an amazing operations team. Everyone on the, you know, production, logistics, security, traffic mitigation, site cleanup, just an unbelievable team. And a lot of the people I worked with at Bonnaroo and a lot of the people I worked with at Outside Lands, but the scenario in Miami Beach Pop is more Outside Lands than Okeechobee because Outside Lands is in a big city and it's in an iconic location and the logistical scenario is just different when you're in a city, and we really needed to come out and get this right. We had a grand vision for what we wanted to do, not only creatively and culturally, but we wanted to do something that was really meaningful and positive for the city. And it took a minute for us to get the full download. You know, you come to Miami and, you know, my partners live here, you know, so we spent a lot of time here, but not necessarily aware of some of the logistical things that can really impact city operations. And to really get a good understanding and work with the city staff to get a handle on what we need to do and make sure that we're in sync with them. So when we're doing this event, our actions are coordinated and complementary and we do something that's really like going to be a very much a positive for the city. Knowing that we're going to go in the first year, we're going to learn a lot, and we're going to get better in year two. But we want to come out and do a great job
in
the first year. And by the way, the thing that you said about Okeechobee with Skrillex and Mumford & Sons and Miguel and John Oates and Wynn Butler from Arcade Fire and Miguel all on stage together, that's like the mission statement for my career. I want artists that are like that, that just the idea, the concept of genre – and genre parameter, like, doesn't even apply. It doesn't even come into the equation. These are all just incredible artists that are exploring very unique common ground with one another in a live environment. And the energy of the audience is a part of it. And it's absolutely like once in a lifetime thing that's never going to happen again. And that's like, to me, kind of what a festival really should be. This group of people will never be together again in this place. And as a result of that, you know, you got this temporary, special, one-time-only community celebration. And it's only for that moment. It's just a pure celebration of that moment.
I still rewatch those videos. And there's going to be opportunities for people to enjoy some of these jam sessions at Miami Beach Pop. I'm super excited about the All-Star tribute to Bob Marley with Stephen Marley And I know there's plenty of surprises along the way, and we don't want to reveal that. But keep in mind what you've heard about the Bonnaroo Super Jams and Okeechobee. Paul has a certain standard for these, so I'm thrilled about that. I think the Nile Rodgers Soul Jam, aptly named, is probably going to be my favorite experience of the entire festival. And that says a lot because we got Jack White coming to this festival. So when we were initially discussing this concept, you were looking at different venues. Marlins Park was something that was discussed. And I remember telling you, like, if you're on the beach, that's essentially your headliner. That's your top line headliner. And with that decision, it took the time, but I think it was supposed to be that way. To have the water, to become one, which is this entire theme of this, because you have built a really wacky wacky lineup. And I say that in the best possible way, because it's top line is Chance the Rapper, Jack Johnson, Daddy Yankee, Kygo. I think this is probably the only city in America where a top line like that could work, because as eclectic of a place Miami is, we have eclectic tastes, and you can absolutely find Daddy Yankee fans that are also Chance the Rapper fans, that are also Kygo fans, that are also Juanes fans. The Raconteurs are playing this. This is the first time the Raconteurs have played Miami. I'm super excited about that. Every time Paul would ask me about input on the lineup, I was like, and we get Jack White? Is there any way we can get Jack White? And the Raconteurs worked out. They were like the first act that committed to this. What sort of challenges do you have as a first-year festival? Because I know from talking to you, all the artists that you were trying to get, and there's so many challenges for a first-year festival in terms of getting commitments from agencies and managers, because they sort of want to see an established festival, because they want to avoid anything that might reflect poorly on the artist. You have to prove it to not only the city, which is per the terms of the agreement with Miami Beach, but also the industry. So to have a lineup like this with heavy hitters like Chance the Rapper, Jack Johnson, this is Jack Johnson's only 2019 North American set, which is a huge, huge draw. He's got passionate fans that I'm counting on will make the trip down here. Can you get into a little bit the unique challenges of a first-year festival and what it means to people in the industry and how difficult it is to actually book something like this?
It's really challenging. It's, you know, you got to prove it on all sides. Nobody wants to come in and have a negative experience, and just like the city is very protective over its beach and its residents, and rightfully so. All of the people behind the artists also want to make sure that their artists are going to have a positive look, and these artists have worked their whole career to establish their brand, and each of these markets, Miami, just as much as any other one, is important for them, and they want to come in and they want to have a good look, and it's got to fit within the strategy of everything else. And it's just like anything you think about, it's a little bit like risk calculation. Oh, like, I like Paul, I like the idea of playing on the beach, but I don't know, it's never happened before, what's it going to be? And it's a little bit of like a little bit of a leap of faith. And like you said, it's you know, like the idea of having Jack White come and play on South Beach. I mean, it's just so special. And we're not talking about small talent. I'm talking about some of the most legendary artists of our time, because, you know, I'm in a position where we work really hard on not only defining this vision, well, not only on working with the city to create a vision that was, you know, palatable for them that they were excited about, but also to define the vision and really drill in and, like, think about what this event was meant to be about. How's it going to be different? How's it going to be special? How's it going to be meaningful? How is Miami Beach Pop going to have a positive cultural impact? And I need to really have transcendent talent that represents the core aesthetics and the core morality of what this event is meant to be about. And to have Chance the Rapper and Jack Johnson, these are two of the most socially conscious, positive artists in terms of not only their artistry, but their activism and their mentality and what they're trying to put out there in the world. And then, of course, we have Jack White, we have The Roots and Questlove and Nile Rodgers and Daddy Yankee and Juanes and
Bomba Estéreo
and Maggie Rogers and Leon Bridges. And, like, these are some of the most iconic artists out there. I feel like we're, like, building, like, a Mount Rushmore sandcastle with this festival on South Beach. And so it's not easy to get this assembly of talent, really execute what you want to do. But, you know, again, there's a little bit of a comfort level based on the track record. And there was a lot of questions about what the plan was and how we're going to execute and like, why this makes sense. Because, you know, maybe if you just see some of these artists together, you know, in an email, it's like, I don't know why this makes sense.
Yeah.
But it really does make sense. It's just different. And the artists that we have are ones that really bought in, realized this could be special, and wanted to be a part of it. And that's the fortunate position we are with Miami Beach Pop in 2019 to have this once-in-a-lifetime experience together here on South Beach. And by the way, you mentioned, you know, Okeechobee 2016 was one of your most special festival and music experiences. Sometimes that first year, like the first year of Bonnaroo, it's, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. You take a leap of faith. You get outside your comfort zone. It's a little bit like a super jam in that sense.
Because the entire festival is a super jam.
The artists have taken the initiative and they had the courage to step outside of their comfort zone and freestyle a little bit. And that's where the magic happens. You know, Okeechobee was such a special experience in the first year because of that. And Bonnaroo, the same thing. And, you know, I always tell people, don't miss the first year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might get better, but the first year is going to have its own kind of magic. And I think we're off to a really good start with the incredible talent that we have and some of the surprises we have up our sleeve.
Thankfully, the music industry and music festivals have started hearing this Latin movement. You know, in like at the turn of the century, there was the Latin fusion where it started as a country changed. Artists like Ricky Martin and Jennifer Lopez became more mainstream and you started seeing them on TRL. And I think you have a second coming of that now with brilliant artists like J Balvin, who's, you know, playing big time slots, headlining Lollapalooza. Rosalia played Coachella, who's an artist that we both really love and admire. But I don't think there's been a festival on this scale that has quite taken the dive into Latin music as this has. And it's natural because it's Miami Beach. I don't want to call out other festivals for a token Latin act, but if one of the big festivals now have Latin acts, it's usually one or two. Not this festival. This festival has Daddy Yankee, Bomba Estéreo, Natty Natasha, Lali. It's got so many tremendous Latin music acts. I cannot believe Juanes is playing this. I don't want to give away who he's playing before, but it's just going to be a really fun experience for someone like me who grew up in Miami and was surrounded by all this music. I don't really speak Spanish fluently, but I know all of these songs. I grew up hearing Juanes at all these parties that I was going to. Camisa Negra is like one of my favorite songs of all time. And to be able to go to a festival in which I get to see my favorite musician, Jack White, and I get to dance to Daddy Yankee, who's the father of this whole reggaeton thing that has blown back up, and it's great to see Daddy Yankee get the respect that he deserves. And now he has arguably the song of the summer with Con Calma. He's headlining this festival. This is so fun, so unique, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I hope the audience, not just locally down here in Miami, but the nation at large, it's Miami Beach. It's in November. Look, in a lot of parts of this country, the weather starts taking a turn at that time. Come down here. Experience this once-in-a-lifetime first-year festival experience because I think it's going to be really special. And thank you for letting me have a very small part in sort of helping curate some of the programming with you and just bouncing those ideas off because you guys really care about Miami. I love this town. I love music. And you're gearing it towards people like me, but also for people that haven't necessarily been to a festival, but their kids like Chance the Rapper and they like Juanes. So let's go out and have this wonderful family-friendly shared experience. And I'm looking so forward to this. I wish you the best of luck and thank you again for letting me be a small, small part of it.
No, well, you were definitely part of my inner circle focus group defining what this event was going to be about. And I really appreciated your input and your passion. And, you know, you have to really like believe in what you're doing if you want to do something special. And when I find people that like really believe in it and are inspired by it, they can help be a part of creating what it's going to be in a direct way. And I'm always looking for that. So I really appreciate it. And I'm so proud about what we've put together here. And I'm so excited for it. And I cannot wait till November.
Stugatz is already hitting me up to have his daughter Emma on stage during Chance the Rapper set. So that ask is coming. Once Stugatz realized that I was working with you guys on this festival, the asks have not stopped. And directly from his children. So the apples haven't fallen far from the tree. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time.
And by the way, isn't that the perfect example of what this event is meant to be about? Parents, kids, grandparents, multi-generational, you know, like your parents' favorite artist is Juanes, but your favorite artist is Jack White or Chance the Rapper or Daddy Yankee. So it's like this cross-generational thing and you can have this experience, which I think all of us kind of want to connect with something special and have that like moment.
Paul,
your parents.
I cannot wait to build out this playlist because any festival that I go to, I put together like the most extensive playlist for this. This is going to be batshit crazy in the best possible way. I can't wait to put this out there. I'm going to put it out there for the audience. I'm going to work on this. Music festivals as a whole, when you put together a playlist, are very eclectic. The sonic profile for this is just one of the more absurd but whimsical things I'm so excited about this, and I think you've created something that hopefully will endure down here for many years to come. And thank you for believing in this market.
Thank you.
Where can people go find information on this festival? Where can they buy tickets?
So everything, all the information, all the artists are on MiamiBeachPop.com. All the new information is going to be sent out to our mailing list and on our Instagram and on our Facebook. And all of those platforms are linked to from our website, MiamiBeachPop.com.
That's Paul Peck, co-founder of Miami Beach Pop. Cannot wait for November to come around. I will be there, and I think so will Sugats and his family of hundreds. On your dime. He's insisted.
Clearly.
All right, good interview. Good crate episode today.
You think so?
I think so.
Crepisode.
Yes.
Crepisode?
Yeah.
You didn't even listen to my interview.
I heard it.
You could assume?
Yeah. No, no, I heard it.
You did?
Dude, that part when he was like, and you were like, oh, that's a good point.
That's not.
But he can't say because it's a mystery.
Right.
So he can't say what it was that was just talked about because it's a mystery.
It aired already. This is the outro.
Great interview.
Mystery. Right.
Yeah. There it is. It took a week off.
You got a future in this business, man. You're good.
I do?
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed this self-indulgent episode of Mystery Crate. We're going to try to help out Mooch from Michigan. I still can't shake that he said drinky poos.
I like that. I thought that was a positive. I thought more highly of him when I heard that.
Calling alcohol drinky poo.
Yeah. I mean, you do Menchie's. Isn't Menchie's in the same realm as drinky poo?
Kind of do that ironically. It was a little creepy.
I think he was
trying to... I just got to know Mooch, and he's like, drinky poo.
I think he was trying to be funny.
Yeah?
I like Mooch.
All right. Well, we're going to try to help out Mooch. Even though I'm pretty sure it might be a divisive segment.
Dream expert?
We're going to bring on a dream expert to help the dude because, Billy, you're a little worried that
Maybe we'll bring her on. It's a mystery.
Oh.
We'll see.
Yeah. You are worried that this happened to him in real life.
Yeah, it seems pretty vivid. And he keeps having this recurring dream. I feel like this is something, I don't know what our connection to any of this is, but it seems like this may be something that actually happened to him, having nothing to do with any of us.
Maybe it's a future episode of The Helping Container.
It's a mystery.
You know, I was actually thinking that, but I feel like now this is like a Mystery Crate thing, so we can't have him on The Helping Container. And if we have him on The Helping Container, we're going to have to hope that everybody heard the Mystery Crate. So yeah. I feel like this one maybe, you know what, maybe it'll be a special Mystery Crate episode of The Helping Container.
It's a mystery.
We'll see. You never know.
Oh!
No, that's
another
segment.
Another segment.
Yes, look at that.